Welcome to Top Self, the podcast dedicated to relax your mind, achieve change, and become a healthier, more present you. Are you ready to move past the daily anxiety, comparing and doubting yourself, and feeling like you're not enough? I'm your host, Shannon Bryant, and I've ruined many good relationships because of my jealousy and stayed way too long in some bad ones because of my insecurity. But I stopped letting fear drive my actions, and now I can't wait to share with you as I dive into these emotions, shed light on how they might be impacting your life, and uncover strategies to break free from their grip. It's time to start living a life of confidence. So get ready to ignite your self-worth and transform your life, because my friend, you are worthy. There are many times in our life where we may have said something or behaved in a way that later we maybe weren't proud of and feel that we may need to offer an apology. So I have with me Harvard-trained clinical psychologist Molly Howes. Welcome so much.
Thank you, Shannon. It's great to be with you.
Thank you. You have a wonderful book out, A Good Apology, Four Steps to Make Things Right. And that's what we're going to talk about today. I really wanted to start off with, even though there may be times where we feel like, maybe I should apologize for that, or I didn't really love my behavior, there are times where we end up not apologizing. Why is it so hard for us to apologize?
There are lots of reasons why it's hard. It's almost baked into our culture, for one thing. But also, it's part of our neuroanatomy. You know, the neuroscientists tell us that the brain is designed to be really efficient. And to go back and reconsider something that you did is a little bit inefficient. You know, it takes more time. So right from the get-go, there's a little bit of a barrier. But more significantly, there are cognitive barriers like confirmation bias. We see what we expect to see. We're really bad at seeing our impact on other people. We're really bad at being accurate about someone else's reaction to something that we've done. We're remarkably bad at it, and we're remarkably confident about our wrong perception. People are famous for being subject to perceptual distortions like optical illusions, but it also happens with our thinking in the same kind of way. And then there are the things that we treasure about ourselves. We want to think of ourselves as kind and good and not the kind of person who hurts people. So we resist information that we might have hurt someone. And in fact, everybody, the nicest of us, we can't help it. We hurt people. And I regularly say that relationships are a contact sport. We just bump into each other frequently by mistake. And so it's kind of a situation where if we don't pay attention to those things, we're missing a lot of information. But it's tempting not to.
So some of it is just because we may not realize or see our wrong in it. So oftentimes we don't feel like there's an apology due.
Right. Often, even if someone tells us that we hurt them, you know, the first reaction is defensiveness. I didn't mean to. No, you misunderstood me, right?
So what can we do in that moment, especially if we're not understanding or we didn't mean to? And as you said, we consider ourselves a kind person. We certainly didn't intentionally mean to upset someone. Right. And then they come at us with, "You really upset me when you said that or when you did that." What is that part where we are not understanding? We're saying, "Well, I didn't do that."
Yeah.
What can we do in that moment to maybe better understand from their point of view?
Right. So my apology model has four steps, and it's a bigger process than just saying I'm sorry. And the first step is to understand the other person's injury. And that has got nothing to do with you. It's got nothing to do with the apologizer about our intentions or what a heck of a nice person we are or how they started it or any. It doesn't have anything to do with any of that. It just has to do with understanding the other person. Experience. And so we have to turn a switch somehow. We have to bear in mind that we might not know the whole story and ask them. So I'm curious, tell me more about it. And that's hard to do if we're being resistant or defensive.
So even if it's a situation where someone comes to you and says, I didn't like that you did that, I didn't appreciate you saying that, the first thing we should do is try to understand more from their point of view and not immediately think, oh, they want an apology from me, or I'm going to have to apologize for something that I don't feel like I did intentionally.
Sure. Or another thing we should not do right away is cancel them or overreact or put it on social media. We don't know yet. We don't know the story. It really behooves us to be curious and humble. And that is really hard to do. It takes a lot of courage to be humble like that, I think.
Yes. Okay. So step number one, we're just going to ask a question. So if we've upset someone and they come to us and say, you've upset me, we need to ask more questions and dig in, not from a trying to decide if I should apologize or not, but more from their point of view of why they were hurt.
Right. Not why, but right? How they were hurt. Like what happened to them? Not what did we do exactly? Although what we did is relevant. What's even more important is how that hurt them or how that cost them something. And sometimes it's not that we did something. Sometimes it's that we didn't do something. Or sometimes it's that we didn't show up for something, or we let somebody down in some other way. And even if we didn't mean it and we don't think it ought to count as an offense, we don't think we're in the wrong or not to blame, it would benefit the relationship for us to find out how we affected them.
So then why are we able to see other people's mistakes more than our own?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Aren't we? We are so freely critical of other people. Yeah. Well, some people have a bias in the direction of feeling terrible about themselves a lot of the time too, you may notice. But most of us really are better at seeing other people's flaws. We have a need to defend what we believe to be true or what we long for to be true about us, you know, our cherished self-concepts. We don't like things that challenge that.
So going back to the neuroscience of it is still proving that, proving our belief.
Sure. Yeah. Confirming it. In a situation in a relationship where there's an argument, there's a disagreement, both people don't want to be wrong. So there's that too. That's another issue. You know, I don't want to be the wrong one, so you must be the wrong one.
We hear that all the time. You know, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? So coming from that place of, I'm going to forget about being right and ask them more questions of how this hurt them, how they're feeling.
Right. And that could be a temporary forgetting about being right. Like, I'm going to get back to that. But for now, what I want to do first is understand you.
You talk about forgiveness inflation. I know you mentioned it in your book. Can you talk a little more about that?
Sometimes people feel they should just forgive for anything. And especially we should forgive ourselves. And we should just shake off any guilt because that's bad for us. And everybody's just fine as they are. And I think that's not accurate. It's not realistic. And it leaves a lot of unfinished business between people, sort of avoiding responsibility. And I really think things tend to go better in the long run, and often even in the short run, if we face as bravely as we can the truth about something. And relationships really benefit from that, because then both parties over time begin to trust that they can face whatever it is. They can handle whatever it is together.
Because they're not going to be met with that defensiveness if they do have something that is bothering them.
Right. Or yeah. Gaslighting, you know, that's not even true. Bad practice.
Yeah, because we hear so much about self-care and self-forgiveness and that, you know, self-forgiveness being part of self-care and taking it potentially to the extreme in this situation where then we're going around saying whatever we want to say and just excusing ourselves versus taking some responsibility in how we may have affected someone.
Sure. Yeah. And I want to say something about guilt, because guilt gets a very bad rap, as if it's bad for us. And there certainly is a very sort of pernicious deep guilt that's not called for. And that's not good for people. But mostly guilt is the way good people know they've done something wrong, or the way we know that we need to fix something. It's productive. Right. It drives us to try to repair or heal something. And that's distinct from shame. Psychologists like to say that guilt is feeling bad about something you've done, and shame is feeling bad about who you are. Shame makes us smaller, makes us withdraw, makes us not try. Guilt can make us try to fix something.
Oh, that's wonderful, because the listeners of this podcast, most of them are probably, you know, jealous in their relationships. And part of being jealous and some of the behaviors that we do when we are in the jealous meltdown, there's a lot of self-conscious emotions that come along with that: guilt, shame, embarrassment. And I like the fact that you said guilt being something that is maybe signaling you to then do better, to be better, but not taking on that shame of making us feel smaller because of it.
Oh man, it's great. If you can find that distinction that, and you can fix something, you can feel so much better about yourself.
I love that. I love that. So thank you so much for bringing that. I think it's a very important distinction between the two, because we do often lump them together. If I feel guilty about it, you know, that must be something bad about me. If I'm ashamed of it, that's something bad about me.
Right.
So confirmation bias, you brought it up a little bit. It's such an important message. So can you talk a little bit more about that confirmation bias, what it is?
So there are some famous studies where the psychologists had people come in and watch a video of people passing a basketball among the group and ask them to count the number of passes or some other number of bounces or something else. And in the middle of the video, a person dressed up like a gorilla walks through the scene, and people don't notice it, because nobody expects to see a gorilla in the middle of the passing of the basketball. And after word got out about this, and the subjects in the university, you know, it's psychology students who do these studies, knew that the gorilla was going to be there. So then they introduced something else completely unexpected. So people saw the gorilla, but not the other thing. And it's about what you expect to see, what you expect to be true, or what you already believe to be true. And often it comes up in a sort of a cognitive dissonance situation where you have one belief and the data or the circumstances would disconfirm that. They suggest that something else is true. And you have to resolve that. They say the brain longs to resolve dissonance like that. And the way people usually resolve it is in favor of the pre-existing belief, not in favor of the information in front of them. You've seen that in political arguments, right?
Yeah. So we always just go back to what we already thought.
Which is a problem with things in relationships like jealousy, right? Because, you know, there's always some ambiguity that you could find to justify the way that you feel or to confirm the way that you feel. And that's a problem. It makes it really hard to get a clean slate.
Have fear and lack of confidence taken over your life? Is your constant anxiety keeping you distracted, holding you back from a successful career, a healthy relationship free of jealousy, or living the life you know you were meant to have? If you're ready to relax your mind, achieve change, and be a healthier, more present you, then book your free 30-minute discovery call today to see how I can help. I let my feelings of low self-worth get in the way for far too long, but I discovered a path to a calmer mind, learned how to be confident in my relationship, allowing me to feel present again in my own life. If you're looking to take your relationship or your career to the next level, or you just want to accelerate your journey to your top self, the link to book your free discovery call is in the show notes. Now back to the show. When I was really at the height of my jealousy in my relationship, and I would go into a situation going, I know he's going to do this, whatever it is. I know he's going to look at this person. I know he's going to, whatever it is. And no matter what, I could see it every single time, because I had already primed my brain that that was going to happen. And so then when it did, it was like, see, I knew it. And in that moment, yes, of course, no matter how I behaved, it was really hard for me to apologize for it because I saw it with my own eyes.
Sure.
Right. We do that. I saw it with my own eyes. I heard it with my own ears. Mm-hmm. I'm convinced when a lot of times it's not the case.
Yes.
Yeah. I love that. Well, I thought that was an important message in the confirmation bias because I think we go through life and our days a lot with that going on. And it really can hurt us from maybe giving that apology that is really deserved or even understanding someone else's point of view.
Yeah. Like both people have to really, I mean, in my view, in a relationship, both people have, if you're stuck in that kind of a pattern, both people have to be attuned to what the other person is doing and need. If you're trying not to pay attention to what you already think is going to happen and change your expectation, that's great. But the other person also should probably change their behavior to help you so that you don't have to as much. Both parties can change a little bit, and then the whole system has less heat in it.
Yeah. So then would it be a case, let's say, if I'm open to, you know, you've told me that I have done something that makes you feel a certain way. And if I'm open to hearing what that is from your standpoint, and that's the way that I typically respond, does that help with the other person doing that as well? Like if they are feeling the same way where I don't really want to apologize for what something that I've done, I don't understand it. If we're open, does that help to open the other person to do the same?
It very frequently does. And also, it's this thing about trusting that you're going to get your turn, right? Like in a longstanding relationship, both people probably feel hurt, not just one. So I don't want to apologize to him because he hurt me too. And what I did was just because of what he did, you know, that kind of thing. And so you may be waiting for an apology from the other person when you might be able to get it, but you might have to be the first one to go, you know? And then the other person will go. And if somebody approaches you and wants an apology from you, but you think you're owed one, one thing you can say is, I want to talk about this. And after this, can we talk about this other thing? Like do it all the way through. Do the four steps about this person's request. Make your good apology. And then you get a turn.
Okay. We know that first step is really listening to what they have to say. And second step in terms of you talk about taking responsibility for the repair, but not the blame. And I think this is probably where people get hung up. Okay, I may understand you, but I still don't feel like I should say sorry.
Yeah.
Can you explain that a little bit more?
Sure. Yes. You're right. It is a problem. It's a little fancy. But it's a statement it could be a statement of regret and remorse. You know, I wish I hadn't done that thing. But it's more a statement of responsibility and empathy. So I care about how you feel. And I hate that what I did made you feel that way. I hate that. I really don't want to hurt you. So I'm so sorry that what I did hurt you. That's different from, I know I screwed up and I'm at fault and I'll never do it again. And please, you know, it doesn't have to be that. It's, I'm so very sorry that I hurt you.
So you're not taking responsibility. You're not saying, I agree that I did this or taking that blame of it. You're just saying, I care about you. I don't want you to feel this way. And I'm sorry that I made you feel that way.
Yeah. It's not saying you're wrong. You might actually do the same thing again in the future. You know, it's not that you necessarily did the wrong thing. It's that what you did hurt them and you care about them.
Thank you so much for bringing that point up because I wanted to ask you about that. You know, for someone who is trying to sort out their jealousy and really get to the root of their jealousy, it takes a little bit of time and we're definitely going to screw up along the way and maybe more than once, certainly probably more than once. And if we've apologized for something and then we do that again,
yeah,
what does that mean to the other person? Like, how do we handle that when we know, hey, I'm working on this and it may happen again, but I do want to apologize.
Right. So in my view, the apology isn't complete until you do something with the step four about changing the future. Setting up some kind of system to prevent you from repeating the thing that hurt the other person. So that's hard. And a lot of behavioral habits, thinking habits, feeling habits are really hard to change. We need some support for those. I think we need often sort of a system between the two people, or the system on your own, or a system with a therapist, or a system where you create a calendar and give yourself, take accounts of things and give yourself rewards, whatever it is you need to do to change what you think is a hurtful behavior, is a hurtful pattern that you don't want to keep repeating. Because a person would be crazy to believe that it's going to be different if it's been this way a zillion times and nothing has changed, right? Something has to change.
Right. So really, your apology is not complete until the repair's done.
Yeah. Until you do something different. And that sometimes that can be administrative, like a reminder system. It comes about things that people forget to do. They don't follow through on things they're supposed to do or they're committed to doing. And the partner has reminded them, and it doesn't work. And they say they're just nagging. And so set up a different system. How many reminders would you like and in what form? And only give those. And the person agrees that they will follow through on the second one or whatever, And then they have to. So it's just changing the dynamic. And, there are probably specific things you could do with jealousy too.
I'm thinking in particular because, like I mentioned, it may take a bit. I mean, there's certainly some quick wins we know that we can accomplish, but it can be maybe as small then as, especially if you have had that very important conversation with your partner that you are working on things and you're trying to really tackle this. So it could be that, hey, I have made a promise that I'm going to, maybe it's go to therapy. Maybe it's whatever, even small token of something that they know that you're working on, and then you accomplish that, right? So it doesn't have to be, my apology is no good until I'm completely over this thing.
Right, because nobody instantly changes and nobody's perfect. So I think that's well put. I'm working on this. And if you and your partner are working on it together, it's even more powerful because you can develop ways to support each other. What would take the edge off for one of you or the other of you? And can the other one do that? Is there a way to signal, so that your partner becomes more sensitized to what will be painful for you? And that could be, it's often a physical thing, not a word thing. Like it's a hand on the arm. It's physically making connection that I'm with you. I'm still with you. I'm always with you. So something like that is profound, right? If you're feeling anxious. If you're into one of those situations where you think that's just baloney and you don't buy it, okay. But if you and your partner are really trying to work on something and you're trying to figure a way that will be reassuring to you, or the other way around, something you could do that would be reassuring to the other person, you can have a signal or a code or a something that says, this is starting to boil up for me. I'm going to take a 5-minute break. I'll be back. I want you only to look at the menu until I get back. Not at any other humans, whatever, we have an agreement about what's going to happen until I can catch my breath. There are ways you can become a team and help the two of you get to the outcome you want, which is peaceful communication and trust. Right.
Yes. I often talk about trigger responses, and that is sort of what that is of you guys having that agreement of, I'm feeling a certain way. And if we are able to work together, like you said, maybe it's just they put their hand on your knee or whatever that custom to you thing is that's going to work in your relationship.
Sometimes people have a thing they go back to together. They have a thing they go back to together, like that symbolizes the good things about their relationship. It's a strength of their relationship. And they refer to that in these moments so that they can join together about it. Some people do it with a humor that they've established, but some people do it with some special place. You know, they say, okay, let's go to Venice or whatever it is, you know, the thing. And then they're there together for a minute. It calms everything down.
That's what me and my husband have. We use humor. And so we're able to, like, you know, he has a thing that he says. I have a thing that I say. We both know what that means. So,
and you might laugh, which breaks the tension.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Thank you for sharing that. What are some myths that we have about apologies or ways that we think, myths of the ways we think about apologies?
Well, one of them we've already talked about, which is that if you apologize, it means that you're admitting blame. You're saying that you're wrong. And I don't think it has to be the case. I mean, sometimes it is, but not always. Another one is that an apology is a sign of weakness. So people are reluctant to do it because they think it'll put them in the one down position, or it'll make them lose respect from their partner or something like that. I think it requires a lot of strength and courage, and, you know, it's a big person thing to do. But I know that especially in our Western cultures, that's sort of there's sort of a model of ideal adult. And I would say in parentheses, ideal male adult, because it is a masculine model, but women are subject to it too, where you're independent and completely confident and you don't doubt yourself. You don't second guess yourself. You don't offer anything. You also don't care about how other people feel. So you have to challenge all that and be able to open yourself to that kind of thing. So I think that's strength, but other people think it looks like weakness. And that's hard, but so that's one thing. Another myth is that apologizing will get you sued. And that is behind a lot of doctors' failures to apologize for medical errors, even very serious one. Historically, they were told never to say, never admit anything, never to, you know, talk to the patient or the family of the person who was harmed or even who died. And it turns out that now a lot of hospital systems have a way of taking the apology needed right up front, very directly, and try to find out what the family or the patient needs, and then try to discover what happened so that it won't happen again and to make things right sooner. There are still cases where there are, settlements, financial settlements. They tend to be smaller. But a bigger change is in how fast they are and how satisfied everybody is. So it works better. It's in business. If a business makes a mistake and apologizes for it well, they're so much more trusted by their customers or clients than if they never made a mistake. So a good repair is really helpful. You know, everybody feels better.
And I would imagine, you know, in the case of the doctors or the business, if they're following these four steps, and like you said, there's actually some repair, mm-hmm. for the most part, people can be understanding in those situations. Like, okay, and they're helping for future. Because if we don't look at it, like before, when you're talking about the cases of the doctors, and we're like, we're never going to say we're sorry or admit to it, then we're also probably not really looking into it to see how we can prevent things in the future.
Right. And the victim or the person who's hurt doesn't feel heard. And being heard, having a chance to say what happened for you or your loved one, and having it understood and heard is very, very powerful in itself. That's healing. It's not enough, but it's profoundly healing, and it's different than what used to happen.
What are some things that we can ask our partner in particular when we have maybe behaved in a way that we're not proud of, to get them to open up and be able to explain to us how we have made them feel or how we have hurt them? What are some questions we can ask?
Well, in my book, I have some practice scripts for each one of the steps. And for step one, what you might do is say something like, I thought I knew what happened, but apparently I'm missing something. Would you fill me in, please? Or something I did hit you in a really bad way, and I truly want to understand what happened. Or thank you for bringing up how I affected you. I want to hear all about it. Or I said I was sorry for what I did, but it seems like there's something else I don't get.
Yeah, those are good ones. Those are really good ones. Because sometimes they may not just, I mean, we can just tell by their behaviors that they're upset with us, but they're not going to openly communicate exactly what they're feeling. So those are really good prompts and scripts that we can use to have that conversation to really dig deeper. And I would say the other thing is we may think that we know, especially in the case of someone who is jealous, like, I'm pretty sure I have a good idea of what you're upset about. But I still think it's really important to ask those questions because there could be more things behind that that we don't know. We're just assuming that this is why they're upset. But that might not be the full gamut of things that are hurting them or ways that they are feeling.
And we also don't know about the impact. We might know how we affected them immediately, but we don't know what happened next. There are a lot of studies about how wrong people are, even about their partner, about their preferences, about their reactions to things. It's amazing.
I remember a case where it was that the partner now was changing their behaviors because of that jealousy towards the other person. And, you know, I certainly didn't notice right away with my own husband, and I think that happens, but they are sensing and they can tell that they're changing their behaviors. And that's something that you would not know unless you're asking those questions and having them go a little bit deeper.
Right.
Wonderful. Well, please go and get Molly's book, A Good Apology, 4 Steps to Make Things Right. And make sure that you're going through all of those 4 steps and that there is some sort of repair. And I think that's probably your biggest message, right? Is that we can say we're sorry all day long and it's not maybe necessarily the words.
That's correct. I think there are 2. I think that's why there are 4 steps and that's crucial. But I think my really most important message is that when things go wrong between you and someone else, it doesn't have to be the end of the story. You know, often we don't try to repair. We don't think it can be fixed. We don't know how. We don't know what to do. And even if we might be willing to, we've never seen it done. We haven't seen any models of this. And so we don't try. We settle for a sad outcome, an unfinished repair, unfinished situation that stays unresolved. And it needn't be like that. So I think this is sort of a very hopeful message about what's possible.
So many good, valuable tips, and never even considered the repair part. In my mind, and I think certainly many others, we think the repair is done when we say the I'm sorry.
Right.
Yeah. So thank you for going deeper on that and sharing those 4 steps with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Shannon. Good luck to you.
Thanks.